You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Samuel Emanuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Emanuel.
It's Real Talk, episode 6.
Six!
Big week in film.
Yeah.
Very big week. We're recording this on January 24th, 2024, which means we are only one day removed from the announcement of the Oscar nominations for this year. Lots of reactions. Suffice it to say, bad week to be named Greta.
Yeah. Yes.
That's kind of the summary of it, but
we'll
kind of get into that. Do you have a place you want to start with that?
Well, let's just start. Let's work our way. We're only going to kind of discuss the big six.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with Best Supporting Actress. The nominees this year: Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, American Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. I've only seen three of them.
I too have three. The same three, probably. Oppenheimer, yeah. Barbie, Holdovers.
Naiad was on my watch list. I just kind of kept putting it off. It's on Netflix. So
it's definitely going to be on the watch list now.
100%. And The Color Purple was on my watch list. I just couldn't get to it in theaters.
I haven't seen the original. Busy.
You really should.
It's really good.
It really is.
It's your boy.
Yep, yep. I don't really have... off the top of my head, just kind of going off the top of my head, I can't think of a snub in this... In this category, unless you have one,
I had a couple I would have liked in there.
Love, fire away.
So first one that comes to mind is Julianne Moore from May December.
Okay, didn't see it.
She's really, really good.
Shocker.
Yeah, yeah, shocking. One of the most talented actresses of our generation was really good in a movie she was in this year. And then one that you and I actually talked about that I think we would have both liked, and you're going to hear it and go like, yes, good pick.
Okay.
It's Rachel McAdams in Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yes, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't believe I forgot that one. Mm-hmm. 100% agree. Love that performance. Really would have loved to have seen her here. Mm-hmm. All honesty, hate to say it, I could easily take out America Ferrera.
Yeah. So that's kind of been one of the most controversial ones this week. In the online discourse, people have kind of been scratching their heads at America Ferrera. No disrespect to America Ferrera. She's far from bad in the movie.
She's far from bad.
Quite good, as a matter of fact.
She has an incredible monologue.
In my opinion, Manny.
Yes.
I think the monologue is mostly made good due to the writing.
Okay.
Not that the performance is bad. I think it's just a very well-written monologue that reflects the reality of a lot of women. So it was very emotional. A lot of people latched onto it as one of the best scenes of the year, and rightfully so. But I don't really think it's the performance necessarily, even though it's a good performance. It's the writing primarily.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
And then even if it is the performance, let's say that is an outstandingly read monologue, the rest of the movie is just fine.
With her?
Yeah. I love the movie Barbie. I should clarify that.
Yes.
The rest of America Ferrera's performance in that movie is good.
Yes.
It's what's called for.
Okay.
You know, in my opinion. So I don't love the nomination. I don't hate it.
Yep.
But if you make me the grand puppet master of the Academy, I'm putting Rachel McAdams in here all day.
100%.
All day over America Ferrera.
Let me ask you this then. I'm not asking for a prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Screw predictions. Predictions are actually, in my opinion, they're far too easy now.
Yes.
Way too easy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go. Out of the nominees, who are you hoping for?
I think I'm going to be writing for, again, I've only seen three. I'm going to be really rooting for Divine Joy Randolph, I think.
Same.
I liked her in that movie quite a lot.
She's the front runner.
Yeah.
Like,
I hope so.
Like, far and away, the front runner. Like, it's, and honestly, like, all, well, I'd say the two supportings are basically slam dunks.
Yeah. She is mostly pretty understated through the movie, but then she has that one scene where she gets too drunk and gets to kind of act a little bit. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Agreed. Moving on to Best Supporting Actor.
Uh-huh.
We have Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Again, I've only got three so far.
Same Z's, we're missing the same two. Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things.
Yep.
I have but one.
Okay.
That's, yeah, I think it's just one. Again, Charles Melton, May December.
Okay. Haven't seen it.
I had him in there. But I'm looking at these nominees and I actually can't really take anyone out.
Okay.
I really like this category. I think it's really strong. It's not a lot of surprises in a lot of categories, except mm-hmm. for a couple, which we're going to get to. But all in all, not a lot of surprises in the nominations this year.
Agreed. Agreed. So, again, this is pretty much a foregone conclusion on who's going to win.
Yeah, it's Ryan Gosling, right?
No.
It's
are
not?
You, are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. Is it Robert Downey?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it is Robert Downey.
Okay.
Yeah, running away.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Is Gosling who you're hoping for?
Kind of, yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's Robert Downey's won everything.
And has been since, yeah. I honestly, I don't really follow, like, the I assume the SAG awards already happened. Yeah,
or
the
SAG, Producers Guild, BAFTAs, Golden Globe.
Blah! I admittedly don't really follow any of those.
Yeah.
It's really the Oscars.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Stay that way. Stay that way.
Yeah.
It's a much better world. Yeah, I don't really have any snubs. Do you have any snubs in this category?
No.
Yeah, I didn't have any either.
No, not really. It's kind of who you expected.
Pretty much. Moving on to the most contentious? Second most contentious? I don't know which one you want to go with. But we have Best Actress. The nominees are Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Portrait.
I'd say this is the second most contentious simply because this is such a jam-packed category.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least one other name that people are trying to slot in there. So
two. One. Well, yes. I mean, no. Yeah. There is one that ever is.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, there's one big omission, and I'm not going to tiptoe around it. It's Margot Robbie being omitted from this category has made huge headlines.
Yes.
But the reason I don't think it's as contentious as the other omission, which we're going to get to, is because also Greta Lee didn't make it in. And I don't think you can comfortably say that Margot Robbie's performance as Barbie, as great as it is, and as much as I like that performance, I don't think it's comfortably head and shoulders above Greta Lee. So I could take either one of them in this category. And even if I could put either of them into this category, I don't know who I'd take out.
Well, I've only seen three.
Hold on, let me pull this back up here. Yeah. Right, so Lily Gladstone, Sandra Hüller, and Carey Mulligan, we've both seen. Yeah. Emma Stone and Annette Bening were both missing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't really follow the precursors. My understanding is that Lily Gladstone or Emma Stone are considered...
It's a legit two-horse race.
Yeah, okay. So...
Now,
I haven't seen Annette Bening.
Okay.
I can't remember who it was in the chat who said this, but they said...
It was Wes.
Wes
Annette Boring.
Yeah, he said Annette Boring, which I immediately came to her defense.
Yes, like, as you should.
Annette Bening is a phenomenal actress. One of the best we've ever had.
Also, and I'm going to happily throw him under the bus, calling someone Annette Boring when you haven't seen any of her performances is fucking ludicrous.
Listen, Wes, I love you. It's kind of a bitch move.
It really is a bitch move.
Listen, I understand we're all emotional about people being omitted from this category.
Yep.
Totally get that. And I think, in all seriousness, I think Wes is just making a joke and we're just kind of busting his balls.
Yeah, he totally was. and I'm happy to bust his balls. Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't seen the performance. I'm confident it's amazing because she's an amazing actress.
I agreed.
But I really would have, in spite of all the disclaimers I've just put in, I would have loved to have seen Margot Robbie in here. I'm not going to use the word upset, but I was a little disappointed.
That's fair.
To not see Margot Robbie in here. Especially, I did recently rewatch Barbie. I watched it this week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many scenes in that movie. I've seen people online saying things like, because she's playing a doll who, in the beginning of the movie, doesn't have any conception of her own death, she's supposed to be kind of a blank slate who's learning to become a person, that it doesn't require as nuanced as a performance. And I completely disagree with that. I implore anyone who holds that opinion to go rewatch the movie, because there is so much going on with this performance, especially as she begins to learn what it is to be human, and the things that she's learning contrast with what she thought she knew, and the cognitive dissonance that this character goes through and the way she has to portray it facially a lot of the time is so nuanced and cool. Mm-hmm. And it's a very good performance. So yeah, a little bit bummed to not see this. Not that I can really... If I'm going to boot anyone out, I think Carey Mulligan gets the boot.
Out of the ones you've seen.
Out of the ones that I've seen. I think Carey Mulligan gets the boot. Yeah, if you make me, again, Grand Puppet Master of the Academy, my three, instead of Gladstone, Huller, and Mulligan, is going to be Gladstone, Huller, and Robbie. But you know, that's just me.
I don't know if I can take Mulligan out.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't even think it's that head and shoulders above Carrie Mulligan. She's very good.
I really wanted Greta Lee in here, though. Yeah. I wanted her so bad in here. That is, can we just purposely review past lives so she can be the first inaugural winner of the Tom Wilkinson Memorial Award?
Done. Consider it done. I'll happily review that movie with you.
Yes. Because that, I think because of the understated performance in that movie, I think that's what cost her.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Whatever. Okay. But yeah, I'm very excited to watch. I was looking forward to watching Naiad anyways with, you know, a movie with Annette Bening in the lead and Jodie Foster in it as well. I'm like, it was on my watch list.
Yeah.
I just
know. Two
I
of
just,
the finest actresses who have ever lived. Yeah, I'll probably see it.
Yeah. I just kind of put it off, and then it, out of nowhere, it gets two acting nominations.
I will say, I posted this in the group chat as well. The 3.3 on Letterboxd does not inspire a lot of confidence. I'm sure the performances are both exceptional. But 3.3 on Letterboxd.
3.3 is fine.
It's, yeah, it's
like under three is where I start like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch this at all. Like under three, it gives me concerns under three.
The lowest movie I have, or the lowest average rating in a movie that I've ever given a 5 to myself is 3.5. I've given, I think, 2 movies a 5, which had a 3.5.
100%. I've given ones lower.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. moving on to best actor. We have Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Oh, okay, I'll finish this off, and then I'll circle back. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Before we continue with that, I didn't ask you who you would like to see win in Best Actress.
In Best Actress?
Yes.
Of the people who made it in, give me Lily Gladstone.
Same. Yeah, same. Okay, Best Actor. Honestly, I think there's only one snub, but I can't take out the 4 I've seen.
Oh, you have...
sorry, so 3. Okay. I've only seen 3.
Yeah.
Colman Domingo is the one that I'm unsure about.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I've heard about Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction,
is like, that good?
I've heard even before the movie came out that Jeffrey Wright was getting a nomination.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to watch it. My snub in this is obviously DiCaprio in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, a bit surprising there.
Yeah. But I'm not taking out... I'm not taking out Cooper, Giamatti, or Murphy.
Another honorable mention I'll throw out there, the closest thing to a snub I have other than DiCaprio. Just got to give to love to the co-lead. I'm having him as co-lead of The Holdovers, which is Dominic Sessa.
Oh, that's a good pick, too.
Yeah. I like him a lot. I'm not taking out Bradley Cooper, Paul Giamatti, or Cillian Murphy, the 3 that I've seen. I'm not taking out either any of them for him. But he's so fucking good.
He's so fucking good. In his debut.
Yeah, I know. Killer. Killer debut.
Yeah.
So yeah, another stacked category, but no controversy to be found here.
Not really.
Yeah. Of the 3, give me Giamatti.
Same. I'm really, really, really hoping for a Giamatti win here.
And they probably will, I think. Even though the narrative has been Cillian Murphy for a long time, I hate to say this, it might be Giamatti's turn.
I hope so.
It might be. From the Academy.
I hope so. I'm all in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, time for the discourse.
The discourse. Yeah. Capital D discourse.
Best director.
Uh-huh.
We have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. And Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. There are, in my opinion, 3 glaring omissions from this list. Now, I have not seen 2 of them. I have not seen Poor Things. I have not seen The Zone of Interest. Obviously, the big one missing is Greta Gerwig.
The one that has made headlines.
Big headlines.
Yeah.
And I'll have to agree that her snub is kind of disgusting. Not disgusting. No. Disgusting is actually too hard. It's incredibly disappointing. Now, as much as it hurts me, I shouldn't say hurts me, I would really like to see Greta Gerwig in here, and you could take out any of the three I've seen, and I'll be fine with it, because I think what she did was absolutely phenomenal. Now, granted, I'm calling the shot. I've called it since day one. Nolan's winning. The Academy is dying to give this man an Oscar. Dying. And finally, he made something, frankly, in a year where there probably isn't somebody that could potentially upset him. We'll see. Like, I think what Scorsese did with Killers of the Flower Moon is mind-blowingly amazing. But he's already got one. So do we want to give him another? And I hate that they think like that. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe what Greta did with Barbie is worthy of this nomination. Of the three, I could take any of them out and put Greta in, and I would be fine with it.
I'll tell you what. While I will not confidently put Greta Gerwig above Martin Scorsese or Christopher Nolan for this, I love both those movies, and I think they're both insanely large undertakings that really affected me.
Mm-hmm.
So while I would not comfortably put Greta Gerwig ahead of either of those, I will echo what you said and say that either of them could magically vanish from this category and be replaced with Greta Gerwig, and I'd be all right. I'd be fine.
Can I quickly interject?
Sure, yeah.
I think I know where you're going, but I want to quickly interject this. I'm going to actually retract a little bit. I think if Greta Gerwig was in here over Martin Scorsese, I don't think we're talking about Scorsese being snubbed.
Probably true. That's probably true. If Christopher Nolan didn't get nominated, we'd be like, holy shit, like, whose wife did he fuck at the Academy? Yes. Like, that's bad news.
Yes. I think no Nolan in here would be a complete snub. I think no Scorsese in here, it's not.
Anatomy of a Fall, great movie, fantastic mm-hmm. direction, very tasteful, love the tone. Give me Gerwig by a mile, mm-hmm. by a country mile, over Justine Triet, respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
I think the discourse over this is not just that Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated. It's kind of beyond that. For me personally, it's that she didn't get nominated again. It's the second time. I recently rewatched Little Women mm-hmm. as well. And
is that the Joker year?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Joker year. absolute insanity that didn't get nominated. That has quickly climbed the ranks for me as just a brilliant movie. I have seen all three of Greta Gerwig's movies multiple times each. Lady Bird, she did get nominated for, as far as I remember. No? I thought she got nominated for it. I could be wrong. To my recollection, she got nominated for it, but Manny's shaking his head, and I think he's going to look it up real quick. Little Women did not get nominated for. That's fucking insane. And then the lack of nomination for this. So, yeah, it's not just that she didn't get nominated for Barbie, for me. It's that it's the same people not getting nominated, and it's the same types of people not getting nominated, if you catch my drift. I know the women do. It's the same types of people who are not getting nominated. Do you have anything for me there, Manny?
Still loading.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm going to push back on the same type of people not getting nominated. There's a woman in there.
Okay, fair. Fair assessment.
Okay. If it was five dudes, I would understand it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. She did get nominated for Lady Bird. Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
Okay. So yes, while there is a woman in there, I guess maybe further to the point, not to dig in my heels too hard on this, but who's the male snub from this year? Who's the man who missed that people are talking about?
Alexander Payne.
Oh, true. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, definitely. Alexander Payne. Yeah. Okay, entirely fair. But yeah, it just feels like, maybe it's just because every time Greta Gerwig doesn't get nominated, I feel this way. But it just feels like more often than not when we're talking about snubs, we're talking about women. That's what it feels like to me.
Fuck. Do you know who this actually reminds me of? And I'm going to love the comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a... I'll be honest. Obviously, I'm a Greta Gerwig fan,
mm-hmm.
but I'm about to compare her to a fucking legend. This is up there with Spielberg. Spielberg, Jaws got nominated. He did not.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure E.T. got nominated and he didn't.
Oh, nice.
So I think there's been a couple times where he's, or like, or maybe The Color Purple got nominated and he didn't. There's a couple times he got snubbed. I know Jaws got nominated for a lot and he was left off,
which is hilarious.
Yeah.
The recent example, the one that immediately comes to mind for me, and I'm sure you have the same note. Argo, of course, famously won Best Picture without Ben Affleck being nominated for Best Director.
Which not the is first insane. Time it's happened, though.
Not the first time it's happened, but I think in 96 Academy Awards, Driving Miss Daisy
won Best Picture without Best Director.
There you go. I think it's like three movies ever, or something like that. It's like a very low number in 96 ceremonies.
Okay. So here's, I'm going to, this will test your historical film knowledge a little.
Mm.
So these are the five nominees in 1975 for Best Director.
Oh, this is like the really good year, isn't it? Yes. It's like an exceptional year. Is it like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yes. Milos Forman.
Not Jaws. Oh, man. Hold on. No, The Apartment's earlier. I can't remember.
So it's Federico Fellini.
Uh-huh.
Stanley Kubrick, Sidney Lumet, and Robert Altman.
Yeah, just insane.
Yeah. Spielberg got snubbed.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
But you get it.
Yeah. What would that be? 85? The other person I felt that got snubbed was Celine Song.
Celine Song, for sure.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the thing. I will just point this out and then I'll maybe leave this as it is because I think people know where we stand on this. But, you know, the Academy and people working as film directors, especially at the tippy top levels of film, can we say, Manny, it's generously, I don't know, like 90% male, 10% female, somewhere in there? At like the best filmmakers in the world, is it like 90% male still, or do you think it's better than that now?
90-10?
Yeah. Somewhere.
That sounds about right.
Like, let's say it's around there. I don't know. I don't have the exact numbers.
Okay.
I just think that given that, the number of women directors who just miss out on being one of the top five best of the year feels very high. That's all.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at the ones who are, like, sixth or seventh best of the year, it tends to be quite high. That's all. So I'll leave it at that. So yeah, I definitely a little upset about the Gerwig snub, a little upset about the Margot Robbie snub, but I can live with it. And yeah, extra shout outs to Celine Song and Greta Lee as well.
Yeah. Best Picture. The nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
And you and I are missing the same three: American Fiction, Poor Things, and Zone of Interest.
Honestly, I don't think they really snubbed the movie.
This is like perfect. This is yes. This is exactly what this should be.
I do have. No, I'm not gonna say anything.
You thought hard about it though. Whatever it was.
I can't really think of a movie I saw this year that I thought should have been nominated for Best Picture that didn't make this list.
I'm looking at my top 10 of the list year right now, and even though there's some on there that are excellent, I can't comfortably boot anything out. There's nothing on there that's undeserving, and there's nothing that's left off that's a clear omission. I think the Academy, dare I say, in this January of 2024, they've gotten it right. Now, mind you, by the time of the ceremony, when they announce the winners, maybe they'll piss me off again. But maybe. Barring two, they did great this year.
We forgot. Who are you gonna hope to win Best Director?
Best Director?
Yeah.
Oh man. You know what, man? You can give it to Chris Nolan for me. I think I would love to see that.
I want them to get it, so get it over with.
Hmm.
So I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Sure.
Yeah.
Again, that may change when I see Poor Things or Zone of Interest.
Mm.
But I would love to see Chris Nolan win it.
Yeah. Who are you rooting for in Best Picture?
Now for the chaos, Barbie. Just so I can watch the internet burn itself to the ground. in all seriousness, I would like to see Barbie. It's not, it's in all likelihood not going to win. I think.
Do you think? Gosh. Hold on. Let me run this by you right now. So the voting has only begun.
Yeah.
Nominations are announced.
I know exactly where you're going with this, and the answer is yes, it might happen.
Do you think a lot of people might vote for Barbie now to give that Oscar to Greta and give director to Nolan so they both get recognized?
That is not only a possibility, that is arguably the best outcome. And if that does come to pass, and then 20 years go by, and we reflect on the year 2023 in film, what is the defining thing that happened in 2023 in film?
Barbenheimer.
It's Barbenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't think of a better way to reflect on the year than to do that. Now, is Barbie the best picture of the year? For me, no. I don't know what deserves it. It's a really close race for me.
I have a film I'm really hoping for, and it's not Barbie.
I'm kind of hoping out for a low dark horse pick. I'm not holding out hope. I don't think it's going to win it. If Past Lives if Past Lives manages to come up and upset all these behemoths, I would love that.
I'll be fucking ecstatic. I'll be absolutely ecstatic.
I would absolutely love that. I think for me, again, having not seen three of them, so my opinion may change by ceremony day. As of right now, I'm rooting number one for Past Lives and probably number two for Barbie.
I would go Past Lives, Holdovers, Barbie.
Yeah, I have Barbie. Any of those three, man.
Hoping, not predicting.
Yeah,
hoping.
There's only
in all. The more I think about it, the more I talk about the Barbenheimer double win there.
Yeah,
like Barbenheimer.
I really like that.
I also really want Barbie to win to really tell all those fucking red pill guys to go fuck themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
All these people I see online who talk about like Barbie was a piece of shit. I fucking went in there. It was fucking stupid. And I'm like, you live a very sad life.
Yeah.
Like if you went into Barbie, and don't get me wrong, I have friends, friends who are like, I'm not going to watch a fucking Barbie movie. I'm like, well, then you're missing out on good movies.
Yeah.
That is your own preconceived notion of just because it is a girl's toy that you won't go see that movie is fucking sad to me.
Yeah, and I'm sure the opinions of Vin Diesel Superfan _69 on Reddit are probably very much in favor of Barbie. Like, it's undeniably a great movie. I don't really get it.
That's like me refusing to go see a movie called The New York Yankees.
It's kind of like that.
Kind of. I'd be like, fuck, I'm not going to watch a fucking movie about the fucking Yankees.
And you probably have watched movies about the Yankees, if I'm to guess.
61.
Yeah.
Great movie.
I've watched Fever Pitch.
Are the Red Sox your Yankees?
No, they're not my Yankees. The Yankees are my Yankees.
I know I'm probably not a distant number two.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Red
Honestly,
Sox.
Honestly, though, like when
or,
I.
Or it'd be the Astros.
The Astros. Okay. When I was getting into baseball, off topic, but like when I was getting into baseball, the Jays were garbage. So, I mean, I was Jays number one still. But when it came October, it was kind of like, do you want to root for the Sox or do you want to root for the Yankees? And I would always cheer for the Sox. Just fuck the Yankees.
Yeah, fuck the Yankees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you get it.
I do get it. All right. So that's our Oscar nom recap. We didn't really take a look at like a lot of the below the lines. And I'm not even going to bother now.
Yeah.
If anybody out there has any other Oscar snubs that they think are worthy, let us know. I'll make it the weekly question.
Yeah, the only really thing of note I wanted to bring up, or one of the only things I wanted to bring up, is that Pixar got its annual nomination for Elemental. Okay. I hope it loses.
Well, what got snubbed in, like, what should have been in there?
Well, that's exactly it. I was just going to say, if somebody has an animated movie I should watch over it, let me know. But
have you seen Elemental?
I've seen Elemental. It's okay.
I think it's gorgeously animated.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I think the story is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It didn't affect me, like, on an emotional level. You're right that it's gorgeous looking.
It's stunning.
Yeah. I haven't seen Robot Dreams or Nimona or Boy and the Heron, but I do plan to see Boy and the Heron. But
I'm not going to be able to see Boy and the Heron.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I'm really not that sad about it.
Yeah. I imagine, again, I haven't seen any of the lead up to it. I imagine it's probably Two Horse Race, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and Boy and the Heron.
From my understanding, the Boy and the Heron has got a pretty sizable lead now.
Fair enough.
And in all honesty, I think it's for two reasons. One, remember, this is just, I don't know, conspiracy theory, or I have not seen The Boy and the Heron, so I don't know. But it is widely rumored that this is Miyazaki's last film.
Just like it was widely rumored with his last 10.
Yeah, of course. He's also older now. Yeah. So it that could be a legit thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Into the Spider-Verse already has an Oscar. So
there you go. Yeah, looking down, honestly, my summary of all the below the line stuff is that I'm rooting for Barbie in basically everything. I think the production design, the costuming, everything is just exceptional. I'm rooting for it in Best Original Song, rooting for Billie Eilish to get her second Oscar for What Was I Made For.
I don't want that to win.
I'm just Ken?
Yes.
Yeah? Either or, man. Give me either.
I would give anything for that to win.
I really hope Ryan Gosling sings it at the ceremony.
There's rumors he won't.
He won't?
Yeah.
Fuck. I would love for him to.
So would I.
It'd be sweet.
It's honestly, it's the thing I'm looking forward to the most at the Oscars is him doing that. Because like I said, it pretty much looks like almost all the major categories are locks already.
Mm-hmm.
So this is now the second year in a row where the thing I'm most excited for is an original song performance.
Yeah, and then oh, there was one other thing. I just always like to give a shout out to a young up and comer. So some guy in the you know exactly what I'm gonna say. Always like to give a shout out to a young up and comer. So congratulations to the composer behind Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny for getting a nomination for Best Original Score.
His first ever?
Well, first for this movie. You know, just always got to give a shout out.
But not his first for this franchise.
Yeah, Jonathan Williams. Really excited to see what you do moving forward. If you keep your head down and really really keep at it and keep honing your craft, you've got a future in this business, kid.
Have you been working on that list of his yet?
I haven't. No, not at all. He better not drop dead anytime soon.
He's only 90-something. Knock on wood. We gotta smarten up.
Yeah.
I think if we set a goal,
mm-hmm.
each week to have just listened to one soundtrack of his.
You know what? I often find myself wanting to listen to film scores but not really knowing which to put on. I think that's my solution.
Right, I think there. I think if you and I just say, at least if we can try once a week, mm-hmm. to just listen to one of his film scores and just write down just like an ongoing list of like 0 to 5 tracks from that,
and
that we like,
you notice.
Just put the list together. Start mm-hmm. putting the list together.
Yeah.
Because it would be really amazing if we had something ready within the next, hopefully, 5 years, if we can hold out hope that yeah. he looks pretty spry still.
Yeah, hey man, he's Academy Award nominated.
But
again,
it's coming, mm-hmm. and I think if anybody deserves a career retrospective honorary episode shortly after,
you
they
could
pass.
Make an entire series about the man.
Yes, so I think I'm gonna start poking you.
Yeah, on for that. Sure. Please poke away.
Okay, all right. Perfect segue into our In Memoriam this week. We had a filmmaker pass away.
Died already? Sorry, that's a dark joke.
We did have a filmmaker pass away this week, Norman Jewison, a Canadian filmmaker who I've always heard heralded as an incredibly gifted filmmaker. I actually didn't know that he was nominated for 7 Oscars, both directing and producing. So I have them listed here. He got a nomination for directing and making Moonstruck, a movie I have not seen. Producing credit for a movie called The Soldier's Story. Director and producing Fiddler on the Roof. Directing In the Heat of the Night. And producing The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming.
In the Heat of the Night must be considered his best?
Yes.
I only say that, again, I have no experience with them, but I only say that because that's the one that I've heard of.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I remember what you watched that in the last year or two.
Yeah, and it's as good as they say. It's like one of those movies, you know, it's on the AFI, it's considered one of the classics, and when, you know, you go into those movies, you're like, is it as good as they say? And then you watch, you're like, yeah, it is. It is that fucking good.
Yeah.
He did win the Irving G. Thalberg Memorial Award. It is an award periodically granted by the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences at the Governor's Awards to creative producers whose bodies of work reflect the consistently high quality of motion picture production. He got it in 1999 for his career. I've only seen three of his films. And so I have at number three, it's a movie called Other People's Money. It's a comedy, kind of, with Danny DeVito. I've only seen it once, and I saw it back in the 80s, so my recollections of it are next to none. But the next movie I saw of his is The Hurricane with Denzel Washington. Denzel got a Best Actor nomination from it, and it's attached to Kamloops. As, do you know the story of The Hurricane?
I don't.
It's a boxer who was wrongly convicted of murder and sent to jail, and a group of law students somehow caught wind of it, started to investigate it, and the lead person investigating it is a lawyer here in Kamloops.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had a premiere for that movie here in Kamloops. Denzel did not come.
Yeah.
But they had a premiere here because the lawyer who's portrayed in the film is here, so they had a premiere here.
Oh, great.
But The Hurricane, it's a good movie. It's Denzel, right? Mm-hmm. Come on. And then obviously my number one film of his is In the Heat of the Night.
For sure.
Sidney Poitier. Blowing your fucking mind.
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
Oh, that scene is as good as you think it is. It's so fucking good. Yeah, absolutely incredible film. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. Yeah. So we just wanted to pay our respects to Norman Jewison. I'm very curious. I'm kind of wondering, is Norman Jewison going to be honored at this year's Oscars? He did pass away in 2024, but he did die before the broadcast.
I have to imagine it feels weird to wait a year to honor him.
I agree.
I think most of the time when people pass in the lead up to the ceremony, they're included.
I think so.
I think that's what happens.
Yeah. So yeah, Norman Jewison, thank you for everything you've done. I have now. He did a movie I'm really been wanting to watch for a long time. He did the original, The Thomas Crown Affair, and the remake in 99 is a movie that I fucking love. So I've been really wanting to watch the original, and I think it's kind of now with his passing, it's kind of bumped up my desire to watch that movie. Mm-hmm. So yes, thank you, Norman Jewison. Let's get into what we've been watching. Sam, you have one movie that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, that's right.
Why don't we get into it?
Yeah, so in trying to watch a bunch of 2023s for the end of the year, I visited this little movie that I had mixed feelings about going into. I was nervous to see what I would think of. No Hard Feelings.
Oh, shit.
It's 59 Metascore. On the brink of losing her home, Maddie finds an intriguing job listing. Helicopter parents looking for someone to bring their introverted 19-year-old son out of his shell before college. She has one summer to make him a man or die trying. It says she has one summer. I interpreted this to mostly take place over the span of a couple of days.
Oh, no. For me, it definitely was over the span of a couple of months.
Oh, okay. Cool. Regardless, so as is kind of alluded to, the important part of the story that they don't say in that is that Jennifer Lawrence's character is significantly older than the young man she's trying to seduce. So this has been maybe a bit of a controversial film because she's playing a 32-year-old who is trying to seduce a 19-year-old who, throughout the course of the movie, is kind of giving some pushback. He's not quite ready to have sex yet. And it's been a little bit controversial, and that is kind of what I knew about it going into this, is that age discrepancy played a large role in the film.
Yep.
And that there was some buzz around it because of that. 59 Metascore is pretty middling.
59.
And I knew that Manny liked this movie.
Yeah.
And you and I tend to have different opinions on comedies a lot of the time. Not always, but a lot of the time. I was very surprised by this movie. I had a lot of fun.
So did I.
You can't help but compare this to Licorice Pizza, just due to the subject matter a little bit.
Although this is legal.
Precisely. That's kind of where I was going. So When Licorice Pizza came out, I don't have the exact ages. I think it's something like a 25-year-old woman seducing a 15-year-old boy.
Sounds right.
Something like that.
The 25 sounds very accurate.
That was a critically renowned film. Of course, it had its detractors. I was one of them.
I was not.
That one felt a little icky to me. I didn't get the same ick from this film. I thought the way that the relationship was portrayed was incredibly tasteful.
So do I.
I thought that the way it portrayed Maddie, Jennifer Lawrence's character, as kind of a loser, as a loser, and this Percy individual, who's the 19-year-old boy, as a bit of an awkward dork, but ultimately a very smart, capable young man. And very sweet, who just needs a little bit of confidence. That's all it is. And the way it portrays her seduction of him, not as something for him, like, how the hell can you not be into that, but more as, like, this woman's a fucking loser and she does not deserve to be with this man.
Yes.
And not really something to be aspired to, I thought was totally tasteful. I was not grossed out at all by this relationship.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, I thought it was very tastefully handled. The scene of him playing a song on piano is
chills.
One of the scenes of the year.
It's so sweet.
And the cuts to Jennifer Lawrence's reaction, her reaction shots, are so good. The recontextualizing of that song, like the original song, I'm not going to really spoil it, but it's kind of about, it's a playful song about a woman who will come get you, like a woman you got to be careful about. But the recontextualizing in this film, where the relationship is borderline a little bit creepy, is so interesting and works so well for me. And the performance by the young actor whose name I don't have in front of me, Andrew Barth Feldman.
Mm-hmm.
I assume he's a musical theater kid because his performance of the song is exceptional.
Yeah. I have it on my songs for movies playlist.
Yeah.
Because it's on Spotify. His performance is on Spotify.
It's really, really good.
It's so good.
Yeah. So, I was thoroughly surprised by No Hard Feelings. I was not expecting to like it.
Can I jump into the scene you're just talking about before you move on from it?
Yeah.
Okay, so two things. You were definitely dancing around the song. So
I wasn't sure if I was allowed to say it or not.
I have no idea. So I will
continue. You can say it if you want.
Well, I'll say the funny I actually recently found out I won't reveal the song since you seem to want to dance around it. So okay. to keep it that way. I actually found out that song is actually not about a woman.
Oh.
It's actually about New York City.
Which makes sense.
Yes, that's what that, even though the title of that song does not hint, it literally says that it's about a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But the song is about the songwriters, who I won't reveal because that would give it away in the movie, have stated that the song is about New York City.
That's super funny.
Back to your mentioning of Jennifer Lawrence's editing, back to her reactions of the singing of that song. I think I might have said in my review, or I talked to somebody, I'm like, this is what happens when you get an Academy Award winner in your comedy. Mm. Most of the movie, Jennifer Lawrence is having a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And her acting prowess really isn't on display. She's having a great time, and you believe the character.
She's just playing something, but...
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
But it's at this moment where you're like, that's what happens when you hire somebody who's won an Academy Award and who is an incredible actress. Because her reactions to that song being played are literally chef's kiss amazing. And I agree. That scene, spoiler alert, could show up at the Sampas this year.
It's almost, it's the conclusion of her character arc almost. Or maybe not the conclusion, but it's the apex of her character arc where she fully realizes in that moment, like, I'm going to ruin this kid's fucking life.
Yeah.
And you can see it all in her face. She no longer knows what to do. She's
yep.
like, I'm in trouble. I'm in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Without spoiling anything, another scene in that movie that I fucking loved because I'm older
mm-hmm.
is when she goes to the party.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's a great scene.
I had a good time.
Yeah.
In that scene.
It's funny. I've read some reviews and stuff. It seems like what most people want to talk about with this movie is the beach scene. That's kind of what most people want to
talk
about.
Don't get me wrong. Beach scene was fucking funny.
It's great. The beach scene's great.
It's fucking, it's pretty fucking funny.
But it's not, it's like third or fourth down the list for highlights for me.
Yeah. There, I wish I could remember it, but I, like I think it's like less than 5 minutes into this movie, I knew I was gonna have a good time, because it's not a major part of the movie, but she makes a remark about yes, it's about, because she is, it's part of the movie, she is not rich, but she is in, I think it's the Hamptons. I think that's where they are.
Montauk.
Montauk. Oh, right. She's in Montauk, which is a very rich area along the eastern seaboard. Mm-hmm. But she's not rich. Her family just happened to grow up there. And she's talking to, I think, her lawyer or her friend. She's like, do you know what it's like to have a bunch of people come in and take all your land away? And he happens to be First Nations? I laughed so fucking hard. So fucking hard.
That is a good moment.
Yeah. And that's like 5 minutes in. And I was like, all right, you have got me. I am on board. I'm with you. I had a great fucking time with that movie. Mm-hmm. I went in, again, I heard the reviews were, it was okay. And I wanted it, and I was like, I am so sorry. I'm like, I fucking love this movie. Love this movie.
Yeah. This could have been a disaster. I really was not sure what to think going into this film. But I think what really sold it for me is that their relationship is not treated as something to be aspired to. It's something that's treated as kind of sad. Like, she's kind of, her character's kind of a fucking loser.
Yeah.
And that is what sold the movie for me. So yeah, it gets a 4. It was a lot of fun.
Wicked.
A lot of fun.
I fucking love that. It was a 4. Easy 4 for me. Mm-hmm. I had a great time. In all honesty, this is one of the movies I actually haven't been able to stop thinking about. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I think this is a movie that I'm going to rewatch. Like, if I'm like, I just want to put something on, have some fun, this might be one I'm going to go to.
For sure.
A little bit more consistently.
Put it in the bank.
Wigan. All right. So I've got a couple movies I'd like to talk about. And I decided to, I don't know what came over me last week, I decided to watch some older movies. And I was, on Saturday especially, I had my daughter here, but she was gaming online with one of her best friends who lives in Revelstoke, and they just play Roblox together online, mm-hmm. and it's fucking adorable. So I wanted to watch something, but I also have to make sure that I can watch something that if my daughter happens to come out of her room and into the front room, that I'm not watching something that is, something like No Hard Feelings, or perhaps something that is overly violent. So I'm mm-hmm. always trying to find the right balance, but also something that I can get into. So I decided to rewatch a movie I hadn't seen in a long time. The 1956 musical, The King and I.
Oh.
The plot. A widow accepts a job as a live-in governess to the King of Siam's children. This movie stars Yul Brynner, Deborah Kerr, and Rita Moreno. Yul Brynner wins the Oscar for Best Actor this year for his performance as the King of Siam, reprising a role that he won a Tony for on Broadway for the stage production of The King and I. To say that this movie brings me joy is a massive understatement. Yul Brynner is absolutely fucking marvelous. He exudes the royalty of the King of Siam, but he is having so much fun. His theatrical performance just brings me nothing but joy. Highlights include when he's introducing the royal children, when he... When he makes Deborah Kerr, who he has amazing chemistry with throughout this movie, mm-hmm. when he makes her follow through on her promise, that's all I'll say. And when he is obviously jealous when another member another citizen of Britain comes to visit, mm-hmm. Who happens to have a history with Deborah Kerr's character, he is. He plays a very childish jealousy that is very fun to watch on screen. Yul Brynner, probably at the height of his physical attractiveness, he is bare-chested throughout most of the film, and it is nice to look at. Mm-hmm. While he's not as cut as, say, like Ryan Gosling in Barbie,
many people are.
No, but he's in really good shape. The movie is so much fucking fun. After watching it, I just realized, Mike, I am going to be revisiting this movie a little bit more often. I had such a great time. The dancing and the dance numbers and the singing. There's not a lot of dance numbers, sorry. There is one big kind of magical dance number, but it's not what you think of in a dance number in a musical, right? It's not like this big choreography.
It's not like the the end set piece of Singing in the Rain.
Yeah. It's nothing like that at all. It is literally just the two characters having a dance together, and it's really sweet. But the songs are absolutely just so much fun. I had a great time with this movie. I only gave it a 4. I don't know why it's not a 5. I think when if I watch it a couple more times, it'll probably jump up to a 5. But The King and I, absolutely fucking delightful. I own it, so unfortunately it's not streaming anywhere. If it does hit streaming, this is definitely going to be an MMC pick for me, because I would love for everyone else to watch this movie. If you get a chance to watch The King and I from 1956, I highly recommend it if you want to just watch something that is so delightful. I had a great time with this.
Cool. Yeah, I'm familiar with this movie's existence, but not really a ton about it. I'm certain it's one of those I would watch and be like, oh, that's what that's from. Oh, yeah. That's what that's from. Over and over again.
Maybe. I don't think there's a lot of famous...
Like songs or anything?
Oh, some... Yeah, there might be a couple.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple.
Like when I watched Singing in the Rain,
It is Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I watched Singing in the Rain, that was a good example of like... There was like 3 songs. I'm like, I had no idea what that's what that was from.
The next movie I watched was one I'd barely started once, and I realized it was a little too late, so I put it off because I wanted to give it the attention it deserves. It is the 1964 Western A Fistful of Dollars. A wandering gunfighter plays 2 rival families against each other in a town torn apart by greed, pride, and revenge. This is the very definition of the spaghetti Western. This is directed by Sergio Leone. It is starring Clint Eastwood. This movie is absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. This movie is so fucking good. I had such a great time with this movie. I can't wait to watch the rest of the Man with No Name series. A Fistful of Dollars, something else, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah, just the middle one. You want it?
It's not Hang 'em High.
No, it's also Dollars.
Oh. No, I'm not going to get it.
For a few dollars more.
For a few dollars more, okay. So I'm really excited to watch these movies. Because I had such a... I have seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but probably not since the 90s. What I can say about A Fistful of Dollars... do I give this away? Okay. So the movie starts out fairly decently. It's not bad. But what elevates this movie to a whole other level is the climactic ending. And I would love to reveal it has a very personal... aspect of it that means a lot to me, but that would kind of give away something. But what I can say is when you watch this movie, you realize like, oh, this is one of the movies Tarantino steals from.
Nice.
It is so apparent.
Okay, so then I assume Pulp Fiction ripped something from this, if there's a personal connection.
No.
Oh,
but you'll okay. definitely recognize you'll recognize a lot of editing choices.
Okay.
And you'll recognize a lot of things. The personal aspect isn't a Tarantino film.
Okay.
I can reveal it to you later off air if you'd like.
Sure.
It does spoil something in the movie.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I doubt you'd care all that much. Mm-hmm. But what I can say is the climactic ending of this movie is one of those moments where you and I love where the tension slowly builds ever. So slightly, and it just gets more and more tense and more, and you're kind of leaning in more and more excited to see what happens next. That was the ending of A Fistful of Dollars. Absolutely spectacular film. Easy 4 out of 5 for me.
Great. No, I'm glad you like this. I do intend to go back and revisit more and more classics. Just on the Wikipedia page for this, it's credited as like the movie that popularized the spaghetti Western.
It's easy to see why. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Apparently it was released in 64 in Italy and didn't make it to the States for another 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. The last movie on my list is one that people have been begging me to watch for a very long time.
Yes, I know the one. Okay. I'm so excited to talk about this. I am one of those people.
Yes, you are. The movie we are discussing is 12 Angry Men. The jury in a New York City murder trial is frustrated by a single member whose skeptical caution forces them to more carefully consider the evidence before jumping to a hasty verdict. So this is considered one of the greatest movies of all time. It is always, I think, I can't remember where it's ranked on AFI.
I can get that if you want.
Actually, they usually mention it right here. This is number 5 on IMDb. It is always on people's lists as the greatest movies of all time. So I finally got around to it. I did play a little trick on everybody in the group chat. I don't know if you got to see it. No, you didn't?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Oh, damn it. Okay. So let me see if I can find it for you while you're looking up the whatchamacallit.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the AFI 100 Years, 100 Movies list,
yep.
It says it's nominated. So it might not even be... It also says it was ranked the second best courtroom drama of all time. Okay, so it did not make it on the 1998 list, apparently.
Okay.
Which is wild to think, but it it did make it on the 2007 list at number 87. Number 87. Between Sixth Sense and Night at the Opera, I think. Or something like that.
Really? Didn't make it on there?
Didn't make it on the 98 list, but it did make it on the 2007 list.
Oh, okay. So where's it on the 2007?
2007, it's number 87.
Number 87. Okay. Yes. Yep. Hold on. I'm just trying to... What's going on here?
What are you trying to find?
Okay. So I played a little trick. And it was specifically, it was meant for you to see, but you fucking didn't. So it broke my heart.
Yeah, okay.
But I wrote a review after watching it where I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I would have hated that. I did not see that.
I wrote it out, and I tried to make the review as realistic as possible, thinking of things in this movie that could actually be wrong with it. And then I sit there in the group chat for about an hour. The only people that saw it were Wes, Rachel, and Jordan.
Did people believe it?
Wes did. And it was very fun.
Yeah.
Very fun to have him believe it. And then after about an hour, I'm like, well, fucking Sam. This was for fucking Sam. He fucking didn't fucking do it.
Yeah,
So then I posted my real review, which is a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
I really like to find it. Can you talk about 12 Angry Men? I want to try and find this.
Okay, so I first discovered 12 Angry Men myself. I can't remember what possessed me to watch it, but I did watch it years ago for the first time in high school. And it instantly connected with me as something that so clearly has merit. The thing that's most apparent about it when you watch 12 Angry Men is how current it is. It seems like it could have come out yesterday. The things that it's talking about, the racial bias that exists in juries. And each of the characters seems like they could just be torn right out of the American political landscape from today. They're all so well written and so well realized and all so well motivated. When you hear the plot that it's about a jury deliberating over the guilt of one person, and it's about one man trying to hold his ground and convince the others that they don't have enough evidence to convict, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that should work. Like, just on principle, you're like, wow, they really have a lot of legwork to do to convince not only the jury members, but us, the audience, that whatever they saw, that 11 people who were certain of one thing being true at the beginning are now not certain.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a huge undertaking, and it feels so incredibly natural. Do you have the runtime in front of you? It's like an hour 40 or something?
136.
136, yeah. So in an hour and 36 minutes, we go from 12 or 11 people being absolutely dead certain that what they know is true. They're dead certain of the facts that this person committed this crime, and one person, based solely on principle and what he knows, has to convince them that they're not actually certain. And that's such a huge undertaking. And the fact that they're able to do it in a natural way and a gripping way in just over an hour and a half is such an achievement in cinema. It's such a brilliantly written movie. I can't express enough how well written it is and how well edited it is, that this thing that takes place essentially just in one room is able to be this gripping. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Let me read you my review. Here's my fake review.
Okay.
This is widely considered one of the greatest films ever made, and I can't fathom why. The pace is boring, the acting horrendous, and the plot is ludicrous. I couldn't get into this at all and found myself barely able to stay awake throughout the film. Thank God for the short runtime, as I couldn't wait for this to be over. 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I don't think I would have believed that. I really don't. If I believed it, I would have been devastated.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would have believed that.
So, This is a 5 out of 5. I agree. Everything about this movie is fantastic. The only problem I have, and it's easy for me to let go of, because you have to have, with pretty much every movie, a suspension of disbelief. They do mention it in the movie that the defendant's lawyer didn't seem to care. But the amount, what these jurors discover themselves in the deliberation room would have so easily have been, should have been brought up in a regular court. Mm-hmm. So if you can let go of that suspension of disbelief, then this movie works completely for you.
Yeah.
Which I did. It mm-hmm. didn't bother me. But it, in 57, I don't think anybody's caring. But with all the lawyer shows we have now, all the legal dramas we have now, and basically all the inside the court shit we got to see, I grew up in the generation that got to watch the O.J. Simpson trial live. Mm-hmm. So we've seen the way that courts work. And to see this type of, in all honesty, absolute buffoonery by his lawyer to miss these things that the jurors bring up in this room is beyond belief. But it didn't bother me.
Yes.
It was just something I noticed. I'm like, I don't need to cling on to this. So what they do is, as they break everything down, or I shouldn't even say they break everything down. Is it juror number 7?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. If I'm sitting around the table correctly, it should be juror number 7.
Mm-hmm.
All he does is just bring up points, juror 8, just bring up points that they should discuss. And all he's trying to do, which is absolutely unlike the rest of the world today, is just open things up for discussion. Let's just talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about it. And you're right. They have this great collection of people in the room. We have an incredibly racist old man. We have a very gentle old man. We have a very angry man. Hence the name. Hmm. We have a guy who wants to sadly go watch the Yankees game.
Hmm.
And we have a very meek man. We have these really great diverse characters, diverse in regards to their characteristics, not the cast themselves. This was the 50s after all.
Yep.
But it is a really great movie. Now that I've watched this one, I'm very excited to watch the remake, which stars Jack Lemmon. I'm very excited because I've heard that is great as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to watch that. I had a great time with this movie. This is everything everybody said. It was exactly the billing that I lived up to. It was an easy 5 out of 5.
Yeah. This, if you go on Letterboxd and sort by average rating, once you get past all the like concert films and all that sort of stuff and all the animes, this is one of the highest audience scores on the site.
It's number 5 on IMDb.
Yeah. And it's a universally beloved film. It only gets better with age. And I implore anybody who's listening to this who hasn't seen this, if you just don't like old movies or something, or you feel you can't get into black and white movies or something, like, please watch this movie. It's so incredibly easy to invest yourself in it.
I truly don't understand someone's inability to watch a movie because it's in black and white.
They exist.
I know people like that.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Imagine somebody like, I can't watch a movie. It's in color. I can't. It's in color. Oh my God. It's in color.
I'm sure those also exist, actually.
Yeah.
More snobby dudes.
Do you want to know what I have a daughter, as you know.
I do know that.
She is smart. She told me something today She told me something on the weekend I didn't believe. I literally didn't believe her. I'm like, it's not fucking true. So I had to look into it. That's true. Do you know that there actually isn't color in the world? Everything is actually black and white?
I can believe that. It kind of depends on your definition, doesn't it?
But nope, like this can of Coke is not red.
It reflects red light.
Yes, but it is not red.
Yeah,
it is your brain that turns it red.
It's kind of just another version of the if a tree falls, isn't it? Like if a tree falls in the woods.
No, it's not. It is only because of your eye that is red. It is not red.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Just look. I
believe you, and I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know the point you're trying to get across.
Yeah.
And that's not the point.
Okay.
I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I think you're misunderstanding.
All right. Fair enough.
But if you look it up, it blew my fucking mind. Uh-huh. And then I had to admit to my daughter that she was right. My 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
I'm like,
she can be right about things. She's a smart cook. She's a smart cookie.
Yeah, I hate her for it. All right, that's what we've been watching. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating, it increases the profile of our podcast. You can also give us a rating on Spotify. Also on Spotify, you can answer our weekly question where I will read your answer live on air. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can follow us on Letterboxd at manny42 and Sam Reimer, respectively. What do we got going on later this week, Sam?
Later this week? It's the big one. Episode 282, we're going to be talking about our top 10 of 2023.
Nice. So for the Samuel Emanuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Emanuel.
I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios.